Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today we're excited to have Jeff Mounzer. Jeff is the Vice President of Product at Qventus, a technology company focused on simplifying hospital operations. He's passionate about enterprise SaaS, particularly for applications that improve organizational effectiveness by engaging frontline staff. Prior to Qventus, he was a product manager at Medallia, responsible for the company's mobile products and strategy. He also co-founded a nonprofit startup accelerator affiliated with Stanford called StartX, where he served as its first COO. Jeff received his doctorate and master's degrees in engineering from Stanford, and on occasion he teaches design thinking at Stanford D School, which I've been to, which is awesome. Thanks so much for being here, Jeff. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
It's a treat for us to have somebody who's actually doing AI, so just talking about it and surmising about it. So we're excited to be talking with you about it today. So as I always do, we've been doing this for 15, 16 years now, and a long time, and every month. And this year we are focusing on AI and society. And my first question is always the same, which is that I've read your personal, you know, bio, but I'd like to hear more about your personal journey and how you got to where you are. What's the stuff that you can fill in that we don't know?
Sure, absolutely. Well, why don't we start at the beginning? So I'm a California kid, born and raised in Southern California, and did my undergrad down in San Diego, and then came and did my PhD up at Stanford. So California through and through. Early on when I was going to my undergrad, I was interested in math and science, and so ended up in electrical engineering, but kind of figured I'd hedge my bets and do something business related as well. So I also mm-hmm. studied economics and became really interested in the intersection of sort of optimization of engineering systems and sort of the business implications of that. And so I was mm-hmm. Sort of conceptualized the path that I would take as being on the intersection of technology, business, and leadership. And that formed for me pretty early, trying to find my way into opportunities and roles that sort of fit that triangle. It's actually a big part of why I decided to come up to Stanford for my PhD. I was really interested in the technology, of course, and had a hunger for, you know, doing some deep research in mathematical optimization. But Stanford also is such a wonderful place to, you know, immerse yourself in the entrepreneurship community and sort of learn a lot about business and leadership and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of wanted to put myself in an environment where I would have all the opportunity to explore a lot of different directions. And kind of my secondary reason for doing a PhD was I figured it would give me plenty of time to go explore a bunch of things, because PhDs is, as you know, it can be kind of a long process. And mine was windier than most, because I actually left in the middle of it for a couple of years to go build that nonprofit startup accelerator. Mm-hmm. And so I used the opportunity while I was at Stanford to just explore a lot of different things, be part of the entrepreneurship community, you know, develop myself as a leader, and do a lot of sort of deep mathematical research. And so coming out of that, I developed a pretty strong interest in queuing in particular. Actually, my research is on queuing theory specifically, and applications of that in different contexts, whether it was the electric grid or wireless networks. And a number of people in my PhD research group also studied hospitals, actually, so the queuing of patients and how they move through healthcare systems. So I got interested in that as well, and that sort of what leads to where I am today. It's one of the first threads. I also met the founders of this company, Qventus, when they came through the startup accelerator that I had built, StartX. So got to, we had plenty of whiteboarding sessions in the early days trying to apply queuing theory to hospital operations problems, and sort of stoked my passion for that pretty early on. But then coming out of the PhD, I felt like I spent a couple of years helping a lot of founders get their companies off the ground, but felt like I wanted to build a little bit more of a methodological base for the types of problems I was helping founders solve. And so that's what steered me toward product management, because I felt it was, again, really nicely in the triangle of technology, business, and leadership. And Medallia was a really neat company in that they had a mission that I cared about, sort of empowering front lines to deliver more meaningful experiences to customers, but at the same time, sort of give more purpose to their work as well. And had a really sort of robust product management culture. So I went there really for the mentorship more than anything, and developed as a PM there, discovered that that was the right call for me. I really have a passion for product and the role of product management. So, you know, cut my teeth there for a few years, and then about once a year, Mudit, our CEO here at Juventus, one of the founders, would come calling and say, okay, is it time to join yet? Is it time to join yet? And so eventually made the jump after having sort of built what I felt was a good skill set and foundation and product. And but I just love startups, and I love being in small companies, and you know, even Medallia, which recently IPO'd, just was starting to feel a little big for me. So it feels really great to be, you know, in a small company and helping build it sort of from the ground up. So hopefully that fills in a little bit of a gap.
So a couple questions. Queuing. So you're talking about literally, first when you said it, I thought it was some sort of engineering term, but you mean just queuing people up. That's what you mean.
Yeah, or things. Yeah, I mean, it's a whole mathematical discipline. It's actually very, it's very deep mathematically. It's actually very difficult as well. It's a really interesting space. I think a lot of it comes from like telephony networks, and you know, or at least the foundation of the field. But the internet in particular, it's all about packets of information that are sent through networks of queues. My main focus was in wireless communications, so how, you know, cell phones and other wireless devices queue up information and then transmit it, you know, across the network.
Okay. So it is a mathematical term. Got it. All right.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. So sounds like you've landed in an interesting place. So Juventus, tell us a little more about that. It's a place where you work on simplifying hospital operations through AI. So tell us more about that.
Yeah. So we have a platform technology that really can do a lot of things, but our focus is on optimizing patient flow for hospitals and health systems. So at a high level, the software platform integrates with hospital electronic medical records and other sort of ancillary hospital IT systems to bring in data, and then we apply AI, machine learning, and behavioral science techniques in real time to help identify and predict operational issues before they occur. To help orchestrate the action among frontline teams and their ancillary partners like labs and radiology and that kind of thing, and then help all of those teams manage accountability so they're driving continuous improvement. So we think of it as a closed loop system for intelligent operations. I don't know how much folks on the line know about hospital operations, but in general, I'd classify it as. We have a health system here in the United States that has first-rate medicine, world-class doctors, nurses, et cetera, but does not have first-rate hospital operations. It's been an area that's generally been lacking, and that reflects in, you know, there's roughly a third, depending on the estimate, a third to a half of spending in healthcare is waste. So on top of the platform, which sort of allows you to identify, orchestrate, and manage, we have a suite of solutions, and either would be predefined software, machine learning models, best practice processes that focus on the inpatient setting, emergency departments, the perioperative setting, and system operations. So if you think of like the three main parts of a hospital, it's the emergency department, kind of the front door, the operating rooms, the periop, and then inpatient. And so we work to optimize the flow of patients, you know, from the front door to discharge. And we work with a number of hospitals across the country here locally, the Dignity System, Emory, Fairview, Mercy, NYP, SCL, Stanford, and we're really proud of this. We've achieved really transformative results with our customers. So typically we achieve somewhere between 0.3 to 0.8 day reductions in length of stay, which eliminates thousands of days of waste, translates mm-hmm. to millions of dollars in savings, but also better patient outcomes and better patient experience. Lower length of stay has been shown to be related to reducing hospital-acquired infections. It improves patient experience, all sorts of positive benefits for the health system overall. And I'm happy to dig into more specifically how we use AI and ML to help drive that. But at a high level, hopefully that gives a flavor for what we do as a company.
Yeah. So, because, I mean, I think that's the focus of our year, is like just looking at how, not only looking at AI, but like how it affects society. And certainly there's no better place to be talking about that than hospitals, schools, things like that.
Right.
Institutions, right? So tell us a little bit about, you just talked a little bit about how you're saving the companies a lot of money, but also making the experience better for the patients. So give us an example, like a real life, easy to understand example about, you know, how AI can, let's reel it back a bit. What you're describing is narrow AI. So I always want to go and talk a little bit about what AI is. Let's talk about that a second. So would you explain a little bit about narrow, general, super AI? Could you talk a little bit about that a little bit? Do people understand that?
Yeah, I think we have maybe a slightly different sort of framework that we think about. So if you're looking for
sure.
some specific definitions of those, you may have to provide them. But the way we think about and really what we do is machine learning specifically. Now, I should contextualize this a little bit. As I mentioned earlier, we have a system and a platform that helps drive the identification of issues, then orchestrates actions, and then helps manage accountability. Orchestrating action and managing accountability, we'll use statistical methods and statistical techniques in there, including ML, but the primary sort of place where we're using machine learning is to identify and predict operational issues. And for us, we're using all sorts of machine learning techniques, and we can dig into the math if folks are really curious. But just to keep it really simple, at a high level, we're doing things to look at patterns in the data and build models that can forecast events. So I'll give an example here of a surge warning. So we can forecast, for example, based on the data that we're seeing in the emergency department right now, which patients are coming in, what day of the week it is, who's on staff, the conditions of the patients as they come in, what's happening in the rest of the hospital. So one of the use cases for us would be we can forecast that there's going to be a surge in the emergency department. Actually, there are TV shows about this all the time. I think one of them more recently, it was called Code Black, the dramatization of, when the ED gets really crowded, it's called I actually have not met a hospital yet who calls it a Code Black, but I have, they'll call it Code Gray or, I think black is just a pretty dark color. But the idea here is, and this is very traditional in queuing systems in general, is when the system becomes overly stressed, all sorts of things break down. So processes break down, staff burn out, mistakes get made, and there is no place in the hospital more dangerous to be than in the emergency department in the middle of a crowding event or a surge. And so one of the things that we can do is use machine learning to forecast and say things like, 4 hours from now, it looks like your emergency department is going to cross the surge threshold. We have a surge that's incoming. And then use our orchestration and managing accountability workflow capabilities to rally the care team around taking a specific set of actions to mitigate and ideally prevent the surge from happening in the first place. By the way, there's some really interesting machine learning implications of this kind of forecast. And we call this kind of model a self-defeating model. So I'll talk about that in a second, only if you're curious.
So how would you say, like, this is different? So how is the AI, and particularly machine learning, how is it different from, what, let's say, even 3 years ago? Is it making it more efficient, and therefore you can, with better accuracy, predict, like, these surges you talked about? I mean, just trying to think how people understand, like, what's the difference? So fine, we've got AI, we've had AI, we've had, of course, machine learning for a long time, but we're now applying it to different things.
So
kind of before and after?
So for us, the big focus is on, our favorite word around here is operationalization. It's how do you take machine learning and really just data analytics in general, but machine learning, let's say specifically, and apply it in ways that people can actually use it. That is our focus. And frankly, that's an area that's, I would say, emergent really across a whole host of different industries.
Right.
The mathematical techniques and capabilities have been there. The access
mm-hmm.
to data has
mm-hmm.
improved a lot.
Yes.
And I can talk about sort of data is the lifeblood of any analytics company, but of machine learning in particular. If you have access to good data, which arguably in healthcare it's middling quality at best.
It's super important. That's super important.
But that's been a meaningful change for us. Our over the last 3 years, our ability to get access to data and the amount and richness of data that's available has created a lot of opportunity to apply. Even some of the machine learning models and techniques, they don't necessarily have to be that sophisticated, and some of them have been around for decades. But
mm-hmm.
the ability to leverage these large data sets, especially real-time data sets for us, that's really important, that have come available and become more accessible over the last, let's say, 5 to 10 years, combined with the improvements in sort of computational power, cloud-hosted compute, all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot more tools to allow people to efficiently build machine learning models in sort of operational settings. Our data science team today has access to libraries and resources and all sorts of platforms for building machine learning models that didn't exist 5 years ago. So it's not necessarily that the math has not necessarily evolved that much, and you can talk about deep learning and some of these things, but many of these have been around for a long time. It's our ability to leverage them,
mm-hmm.
practically speaking, like our ability
mm-hmm.
to build these models in a reasonable amount of time with data that feeds them, that's accessible and timely, and then our ability – that's really changed the game in terms of us being able to build models in the first place. Then the big focus and what people tend to miss is that you have to figure out how to make these useful in workflows. And ideally, you're doing it in the reverse direction. You're identifying what you want to optimize and then leveraging ML as one of a set of tools to optimize that process rather than sort of force-fitting, hey, we can predict this.
Right.
Let's see how we can make it useful to people. So,
those mentality
shifts, I think, are really important as well over the last few years.
Well, and I think that, in terms of change management, it's like it has always been the case with any kind of technology, all along. I think it's more accelerated now. It's certainly with AI. Or the use of AI, I should say. But it's like, how are people taking to this? So are they able to change with the times, let's say? Are they able to take it in? And has there been resistance to? Some of these tools sound really good. It's just that it means that people have to change their way of working. So how have you found that? Do you guys work with people, consultants or whatever, to try to implement some of the stuff so that the change is easier than hard?
Yeah, it's actually, I think, maybe the most important consideration for us as
sure.
a company overall.
Sure.
I think it's a wonderful question. There are a lot of ways to start answering this. I'll say one
mm-hmm.
of the things that is interesting in our space, in the healthcare space, is AI actually in some ways got and machine learning kind of got a bad rap
mm-hmm.
early on through things like IBM Watson at Cypress doesn't have the greatest reputation in our space. But had a lot of sort of market attention. So I'd say 3-4 years ago, just trying to convince people that AI could be something useful for their operations was an uphill battle for us as a company. That was the main crux of the of our educational push to the market. It was just that, hey, this unlocks some possibilities, and getting people to trust the idea that there might be some value in AI. Now, the other thing that has created a lot of skepticism in our industry is a lot of the high-profile applications of AI have been focused on replacing medical staff, right?
Yeah.
If you think about, and it's actually the case now that you can use AI to read radiology images, all that kind of stuff, more precisely than a human can. But obviously there you're going to run into all sorts of change management. Whenever you're using sort of AI to replace people, and that was the thrust of the argument sort of early on in healthcare, this is going to replace all of these different professions, you're going to meet a ton of resistance.
Right.
So our angle has always been that we believe that we can use AI to help improve core operations by providing decision support to medical staff so that they can focus on giving care and not focus on these operational things that they have to do, that they don't like doing anyways, and that they do inefficiently. And so that's a big part of the message that I think over the last 3 to 4 years, we've seen a really kind of, I would almost say a remarkable shift in the perception of AI as a potentially valuable tool and a complementary tool for healthcare leaders and healthcare systems. So that hurdle, I think, has largely been crossed in our space, which is really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next thing is about how do you get people to, for specific use cases, be able to, quote unquote, trust the AI. And this is where we've invested a ton in behavioral science, PhD in behavioral science on my team and product, to make sure that we understand how to explain AI to our set of users, who are a pretty discerning set of folks, doctors and nurses. But also, how do we integrate it into our products and the workflows that we're helping drive in ways that don't trigger the sort of negative reaction or distrustful reaction that you might anticipate. So let's take that surge warning example. What we've been able to do is explain to folks and convince frontline users that this is just helping you get ahead of a problem that you are about to have. So it's like an advanced warning. It's kind of like on a GPS, you see like a traffic jam coming up. We all have pretty high trust in that at this point. And we have, we've found ways to explain that, yes, when we predict that a surge is going to happen, 80% of the time it's going to happen. 20% of the time when it doesn't happen, it's worth it to still be prepared and still taking the corrective action. There's no real loss. There's no real damage done by being more proactive, being more prepared. And frontline staff, then we can use their stories of times we helped prevent a surge to then fuel further adoption from other emergency departments, for example, across the country. But we've definitely made our mistakes as well. So, early on, we come in and say, it looks like this patient should be able to discharge tomorrow. You should change their date of discharge, their planned date of discharge. And if you want to get a doctor to really double down on what their original idea was, you present it that way. Hey, machine says you should change this. Versus, a lot of it is in, again, the behavioral science. Now we've found ways to present that message to our users in a more sort of suggestive way as a FYI, similar patients in the past have sometimes been ready on, the day ahead. You may want to consider looking at X, Y, or Z. So it's a lot about how you position the messaging to our end users to make sure that you're not triggering all these sort of reactive responses, which are natural and human and something you just have to be thoughtful about. So let me pause there and see if that helps start to answer that question. Right. But I have a lot of thoughts on this topic, if you
can. Well, yeah, I did too. So well, before we get into more, because I have a lot more questions about robots, but I wanted to stop for a second and allow people to chime in here. So if anybody has a question or comment, it could be really on anything on AI, but if particularly you have something around hospitals. I'm sure all of us have had our own experiences with either ourselves or loved ones. With the inefficiencies of hospitals and healthcare in this country, it's just kind of mind-boggling. So who wants to start? Anybody have a burning question, comment?
Hi there, Sue and Jeff. It's Rebecca Aurora.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hi. Jeff, you caught my attention when you said closed loop. And to me, I'm wondering, does that mean that this is data internal to the hospital itself? So if the system's stressed and there's a forecast that a surge is coming, not taking into account like, oh, there was an accident on the highway outside, or is this only based on the patterning and the data internal to the hospital?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So I actually meant something slightly different by closed loops. I'll circle back to that. But you know, we'll use data from multiple sources. I will say there's an incredible amount of richness in the electronic medical record itself to be able to forecast that kind of thing. But we have used weather data and other sorts of outside data sources there as well. And one of the benefits of the way we built our platform is that we can integrate all sorts of different data from both, inside the hospital and outside the hospital as needed. But the point around closed loop is actually what we've built is a platform that allows a closed loop management system. And so what we mean by that is, let's take the same example of a surge warning where we're helping identify in advance that there's going to be a crowding event in the emergency department. So in order to build sort of a cycle of continuous improvement here, you have to do a few things. One is you have to be able to identify that issue, which we already have in this case, right? Then you have to be able to orchestrate action around it. So that means, let's say that, the crowding that's going to happen, we can see that coming, and we see that there are a number of beds that need to be cleaned. There are labs that are backed up, and there may be a third problem. So then what we'll do is we'll trigger a set of workflows and nudges to those different constituencies and help coordinate the resolution of the bottlenecks that are present in the ED at that time. So that's the orchestration of action piece. And then after the event is complete, we provide a set of analytics and statistics and models as well that help the care team understand how did they perform in that situation. Were we responsive enough? Did we get the right engagement from the different folks around the team? Were the right actions taken? And then ultimately, did it have the impact that we intended for a set of actions to have so that we can then improve the response for the next time that we have a surge event? So that's what we mean by a closed loop is the ability to identify and then orchestrate the action and manage the accountability of the team against that so that you have a continuous improvement cycle. Does that help answer the question, Rebecca?
Actually, that does answer my question. Thank you, Jeff.
Wonderful.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about robots. So
okay.
You can imagine we've been doing this now for, ninth month or something, 10th month, I guess. And you just invariably the idea of the robots are coming and they're going to take over is a subject that we talk about pretty much every time. So up front, I'm just going to say my belief about this is, and probably one of the main reasons why I wanted to have this series is because I actually believe that's not the case. I think that the AI will actually make mundane things. People that don't want to do mundane things will get to do them less. I would love to have an AI for my calendar, for example, I don't like the ones that are out there so far, but, the idea is that these mundane tasks will be taken over by the AI, but that allow them to help people do other things, and that's anybody. If somebody is on the factory floor and they are going to have a robot will take over their job, then they can do other things on the factory floor that a robot can't do. So what's your opinion about that in terms of how that affects your work and how what you're seeing in terms of what customers and hospitals are thinking about in terms of that idea?
Well, Sue, I think you've basically captured our philosophy in a nutshell. I strongly agree with that. We have always been of the mind that what we're trying to do is help give caregivers back time in order to give care to patients. The amount of time, if you spend any time in a hospital watching what, for example, a charge nurse does or watching a doctor, so much of their time is going to non-value add activities that aren't related to their training, that aren't related to their expertise, and that aren't related to what they want to be doing. And not only that, they don't do it particularly well. So it's really we view it as an opportunity for a real win-win in the sense that we're trying to automate away a lot of these tasks that caregivers get burdened with that they shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, we can do it better than them. And so it's really extending their capabilities. It's augmenting their ability to make operational decisions. But I can tell you, you're not going to have a hospital without doctors and nurses. It's just not how it's going to work. And so if we can help with decision support, with basically, an intelligent partner that's sort of watching your back and helping identify issues, before they happen and help you figure out how to solve them with the least amount of effort, then I think we're making a real difference in the healthcare system. I think it's true for many industries. I do think that there are applications of AI that will replace certain roles over the next 5 to 10 years. I don't see it as much in the operations space for hospitals. I don't think that's really going to be the case. But I do see it in some other areas. For example, like you may not need as many folks, reading images if the machine gets really good at it. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to ever replace those doctors completely. You always, I think, need to have a human in the loop. Machines miss things that will be obvious to humans, and I don't see that gap closing anytime soon. I'll just give an example. There's a lot of analog context in a hospital, and this is true, I think, in any industry, that if it's not captured in a digital context, it's very difficult for an AI to do anything about it. Well, early on in the company, we were building a model to help predict when patients were going to discharge. And one of the sources of data that we did not have and did not realize that we needed was the operating room schedule data. And so what we would run into is we would make predictions and a caregiver, a nurse or a doctor would look at the forecast and say, this patient looks like they'll discharge tomorrow. They'll check the operating room schedule and realize the patient has a procedure for tomorrow and say, oh, you know what? This patient is definitely not going to discharge tomorrow. And it's incredibly obvious to a human. It's not obvious to the machine. Now, obviously, that's a problem that we realized and fixed. But that kind of thing comes up all the time. The OR schedule happens to have a digital context, but many things don't. And in the end, healthcare is really about people taking care of people. And there's so much that, if you see what a case manager does or what a nurse does around sort of the patient's social context, talking to the patient, understanding their needs, using human intuition and human empathy to provide care, these things aren't going away. But we sure as heck can take away all of the surprise surges in the emergency department and that kind of thing, so that at least these folks have a chance to have the kind of impact that they were hoping to have when they entered their profession.
Right. Also, another example is this idea of, and I know many of us on the call, I'm sure, have waited for tests, test results. I had to do this last year ago, waited a whole week. It was excruciating. How do we fix that? Because that seems to me with the AI, we should be able to, we probably can get the results right away, but then I guess the reading of the results is sometimes an issue. And sometimes you have to obviously grow culture, things like that. But it seems to me that that one issue of waiting for results is just, yeah, really inefficient.
Yeah, so this is it's actually an interesting example of one application of our platform. So I'll use a slightly more narrow context here in the emergency department. But one of the interesting things about getting your results back is a lot of the lag time is actually between the time that the results are back and the time that someone reads them.
Yes.
And sometimes, like in the emergency department, you have an emergency doctor, you know, running around the ED. They often don't know that the results are back, you know, for, you know, 15, 20, 30 minutes, right? And ideally they're not sitting in front of the computer just, you know, hitting refresh over and over. Now, it's actually a trickier problem than that. So you might say, okay, well, we could just ping them, you know, on their mobile device when they get the results back, which we do. But because they might order a lot of different tests, not all of which are relevant to the decision, the next clinical decision that they need to make, it's actually a pretty good use case for statistical methods to help identify. So here, this is an example of machine learning that we use, which is be able to identify which results are most likely to be required for the next clinical decision and notify when those are back. Versus, you know, a culture is actually a good example here because that might have been ordered, but you don't want to wait to notify the doc that, you know, that test is back because that might be tomorrow. And that's not relevant to the emergency department physician's decision on what the next step of care is for the patient. So the broad point here is even something as simple as telling people that the results are back at the time that they're back, or at least the relevant results are back at the time that they're back, is one way to start short-circuiting this problem. Now, there are other problems around unnecessary tests that were ordered from other physicians that clog up the queue of labs being done and all that kind of thing. We work on that as well, so that's sort of the other side of that problem. And we have a lot of really powerful analytics tools and statistical tools that help identify unnecessary testing, you know, patterns like that, because ideally what you can do is you can reduce the overall volume of tests so that the important ones actually get done in a timely fashion. You can rearrange the ordering of those tests so that the ones, you know, let's say a patient has a whole bunch of orders that are required for them required for the doctor to make the next decision. Some of them may take a long time. Some of them may take very little time. You can optimize the sequencing of these things so that you're only constrained by the long pole in the tent, but you may be able to squeeze in two short tests prior to the one that this patient needs and still not delay this patient, but accelerate the care of two other patients at the same time because you still would have had to wait for some other long lead time order anyways. So there's so much optimization possible here. I think, as you can probably tell, it's all operations-oriented optimization, right? It's just getting, like, the order of these events right. It's making sure that you don't have unnecessary waste, and then it's making sure that people who need to make the next decision have the information needed as soon as they could possibly make that decision. So I think there's a lot of ways to tackle it, and we tackle it from all those angles.
Interesting. Okay, last question for you. So 5 years from now, what are we looking at here? What's going to be different? More of the same? Something completely new?
Well, when you're in a startup, it's really hard to think 5 years out.
I know.
I'm just worried about tomorrow right now. Let me see. So I think the technology will continue to advance. I don't know that I see any sort of like sea change in terms of, you know, mathematical capabilities or technology capabilities coming, but, you know, who knows, right? That's kind of hard to forecast that kind of innovation. What I will say is I believe that we are on a trajectory that 5 years from now, a lot of the most painful parts of operations. I think operations in general, and in healthcare specifically, is just a really interesting area of application for AI. And I think automating away a lot of the painful parts of the job, really reducing waste. I think there's going to be a big focus on automation, on and just like task replacement, basically, just shortcutting tasks. I think we'll get a lot better as an industry around operationalizing AI. So I think there will be a lot of emphasis on things like explaining why, and then driving the next appropriate action. So I think that actually the marriage of AI plus mathematical optimization to then suggest the right answer, I think that integration is lacking overall, and that's something that will, I think, converge over the next few years. So that I think we're going to move into an era where prescriptive action is sort of the main mode of leveraging AI versus sort of providing insightful information. So prescriptive action plus, in many cases, just automating that action will be, at least that's what I'd like to see, but I do believe it will be the next sort of frontier. And I think it's going to make a meaningful difference in the lives of, and also in our space, of healthcare professionals, sort of starting to unwind all of this operational work that they've been burdened with since the introduction of EMRs, really, about 10, 15 years ago. That's where I think it's going. And honestly, I think it's our job here to be at the forefront of making that happen. So maybe it's a little self-serving too in the answer that I gave.
Well, I mean, I think that you're doing, you're, you know, a mission-driven company, and you're obviously doing good in the world. So you're more, I think, prone to, it's okay to be self-serving because you're doing good work. So I think that's fine. But it's exciting. I mean, what you're doing and some of the other companies that are trying to take the efficiency, you know, making things more efficient so that people can make judgments. I mean, you can't, a robot cannot make judgments like people can, and that's what we have to remember.
Right.
And so we've got to automate some of the stuff so that we can spend our time being able to be empathetic, being able to make judgments, being able to make decisions. So thank you for your insights on this. It's really fascinating, really interesting stuff. Do you have an actual Twitter account or Instagram or anything like that? We can get a hold of you or even email. I mean, I don't want whatever a way to get a hold of you. Is there a way to do that?
Yeah, I am hopelessly deficient at all forms of social media.
So
email is probably going to be the best way. So if folks want to reach out, more than welcome to connect via email and have a conversation.
Okay, awesome. So again, Jeff, thank you so much for your insights. Bye.